Yelton, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey everybody, hope you're having a great week. It is a game preview edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Great to be with you. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. Truly a pleasure as we get ready for the culmination of Hell Week, which is what I like to call any week that the Indianapolis Colts are on the schedule. So we had Hell Week leading into Week 1. Really, it was Hell Training Camp because that was Week 1. And now, coming off of a loss to the Green Bay Packers, hopefully the Texans are the appropriate amount of pissed off to be focused to beat the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. So great to be with all of you. We will do a six-pack preview momentarily of this game coming up here shortly. Quick reminder on a few things, administrative items. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. If you're finding the podcast now or you've been listening to it and you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, go ahead and hit the subscribe button of whatever mechanism it is you're using to listen to this podcast so you get notified of it automatically and you don't have to remind yourself, or you're not going to get into a situation like, oh, I forgot the Utopia Football Podcast. Not that you would do that, but, you know, just make it easier on all of us. Hit the subscribe button. Give us a rating and a review if you would like to as well. Appreciate that. And also a reminder, the mailbag, houmailbag@gmail.com is how you get in touch with me via email. Again, advice on the email. Keep them short. Keep them concise. You guys are doing really good at that. Number two, unless it's a topic that can evergreen really well, send it after the game on Sunday. I'm not going to be answering anything else leading up to the Colts game. I get at least a few emails a week sent like on Thursday and Friday after I've done the mailbag already. Like, so about this Colts game coming up this weekend. I don't read the mailbag until at the earliest Monday morning. So feel free to send an email, houmailbag@gmail.com. Before we get into the six pack and before we get into Texans news, a reminder as well, the game kicks off at noon on Sunday. You can hear it on Sports Radio 610. Texans countdown starts at 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 610 in the Odyssey app as well. You can come visit me and Seth Payne out on the stage, outside of the stadium. We're on the southeast corner of the stadium, kind of near the Modelo, really right across the sidewalk from the Modelo activation. Any of you at the tailgate in the blue lot, we're right there. As soon as you come in from the entrance of the blue lot, we're right there. So you can't miss us. We're the two guys up on stage talking about football next to gigantic speakers. So hope to see you guys out there. And then post-game with Clint Sterner following what we hope is a win on Sunday on Sports Radio 610 and the Odyssey app going till Sunday Night Football at 6:30. And then after that, I'll record the recap episode of the podcast. So always a busy Sunday. It's my favorite part of my job. I love game day and hope to see you guys out there. Be there early. Get in early. My weekly plea to try to get in early. I know there's been some log jams getting into the stadium and stuff like that. There's nothing I can do to control that. I just know that my wife is a season ticket holder and she somehow finds a way to be in her seat 20 minutes before the game every time. So be like Amy. Be more like her. Don't be like me. Be like her. As far as Texans news goes, I would say the biggest things heading into this game, let's start. They signed Devin Smith, the linebacker, I guess, out of Philadelphia. He's more of a Tampa Bay guy than a Philadelphia guy. He's most recently been getting a check from the Philadelphia Eagles, but he never played a down for them on the field. Devin Smith was a really good linebacker with Tampa Bay back early in his career. Came in the 2019 draft. He was a first-round pick out of LSU and had a good first few years. He was second-team All-Pro in 2020, the year that the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl. He was a Pro Bowler the following year in 2021. He was a productive player for them as recently as last year. He had a good game against the Texans when they played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Week 9 of last season. He had a nice game. If I recall, he had a sack of C.J. Stroud in that game. So he's been a productive player. He's been a little inconsistent. He flashes. There's certain things he doesn't do very well. When it gets a little tight and physical and the need to get off blocks is there, not the best, but pretty good in space, very athletic. If there's one position where I'm like, okay, I'm here for a reclamation project, it's linebacker, considering who the head coach of the Texans is. So I think there's probably some maybe foreshadowing baked into this signing with respect to Christian Harris. This does not make me feel good about the Christian Harris injury. I think there's still a possibility they would assign Devin White, even if Christian Harris were healthy or heading towards known health, just because it's not a high-risk signing. His deal with Philly was only 1 year, $4 million. He's not viewed as a high-level linebacker anymore, at least by the marketplace. We'll see what the Texans think of him. I would be real curious to know what D'Amico Ryan's scouting report and Nick Caserio's scouting report were on Devin White coming out of LSU. I think that factors in sometimes, because when you scout someone and you view them as a high-level prospect, maybe that's still the version of them that you have in mind when you're going to sign them even 6 years later, that, hey, we think they can reach this level. I do think you'll get whatever the best available version is of Devin White at this stage of his career. I think you'll get it with D'Amico Ryans as the de facto defensive coordinator and his background as a linebacker and B, a linebacker's coach. So that's my thing with this signing is I think it's good depth, totally worth it. But the Christian Harris injury, I don't feel great about right now. And Aziz Alshire, at least as of Wednesday's practice, was still out with a knee injury. So maybe it's a combination of those two things. Even with everybody healthy, I think they still needed some depth at linebacker. And I say that with Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen having played pretty well on Sunday against Green Bay. But Jake Hansen's been very injury prone. I think Neville Hewitt is still limited in what he can do. So this is a good signing. It makes a whole lot of sense. Your next linebacker down after these two guys, Hewitt and Hansen from last week, would have been Jamal Hill, the rookie linebacker out of Oregon, who's been a safety, who's still clearly learning the ropes of the NFL. I think these are the first couple weeks he's even been active on game day. So makes a whole lot of sense. Wouldn't shock me if Devin Smith were active on Sunday. As far as other news with the Texans, good news on the injury front. Henry Toa was back, limited at practice yesterday from concussion. That feels like one that's pretty predictable, that if you get to where you're practicing, being in concussion protocol, that you're probably trending towards playing again. They need him out there. I can't believe I'm saying that about Henry Toa, but they need him out there moving forward with no Aziz Alshire and no Christian Harris. Henry Toa has played good football for the Texans this year. Watch your head, Henry. Keep your head safe, okay? The big one was Kamari Lassiter was practicing again yesterday, coming back from a fracture of his scapula, which hurts to even say. That's your shoulder blade, people. That's what a scapula is. So he's back practicing, limited. I would expect that if he's practicing, again, that's another injury, that's a bone that's growing back. Anything soft tissue and somebody's limited, I'm still up in the air about whether or not they're going to play, because soft tissue stuff is so finicky. But bones, I think, are a little more predictable. And the brain, once you get to the stage where you're passing all the baseline tests, which I'm assuming Toa is probably a little more predictable and rules driven by the NFL. So I'm hoping that Lassiter and Toa both play, particularly Lassiter, because I think not that you needed a blueprint for this, but I think the Packers might have given some semblance of a blueprint to people that confirm, like, yeah, you can attack D'Angelo Ross, whoever he's. And this is not a great receiving core by any means with the Colts. I don't think it's great. I think it's good. I mean, Alec Pierce is averaging more yards per catch than anybody in the NFL. Adonai Mitchell did some good things in the first game against the Texans. His stats weren't very good, but he got open on a couple of deep routes. So they've got some talent in the receiving core. And then, Michael Pittman Jr., I think, is banged up. I'm not totally sure. But they've got some weapons. So enough to where you need Kamari Lassiter. You can't have D'Angelo Ross playing 100% of the snaps, which he did against the Packers. That's not hyperbole. He literally played every snap of the game. Not acceptable. So those are two big pieces of injury news for the Houston Texans. Lassiter and Toa. Other than that, some guys are limited. Will Anderson Jr. limited chest injury. He was kind of working his shoulder and chest during that game. Remember, he missed some time in that game against the Packers on Sunday. So limited hopefully means he's okay. Laremy Tunsil limited with his ankle. They're managing that. I'm glad Laremy was at least practicing so that the whatever the communication issues are along the offensive line, we'll talk about those in just a second, that they can get resolved. So those are your bits of news for the Houston Texans. Now, Let's get into the six pack, shall we? Five aspects of this game plus a prediction. Those are six cans of stuff for you guys. So I call it the pregame six pack. So let's get this baby started. Can number one, no big plays. This is on defense I'm talking. Do not allow big chunk plays like you did the first time around. The first time these two teams played, the Texans were the far better team over the course of the game. If you go play by play by play, there were way more plays won by the Texans on both sides of the football than were won by the Colts. What kept the Colts in this game was three huge chunk plays in the pass game, 60-yarder to Alec Pierce for a touchdown, 57-yarder to Alec Pierce to set up another touchdown, a 54-yard touchdown to I forget the receiver's name, but it'll dawn on me at some point during this podcast. It was a 54-yard kind of catch and run in a soft spot in the zone there, and he just took it to the house. And then a block punt that set the Colts up for a room service touchdown. So they didn't score a single touchdown. They scored 27 points in this game. They had four touchdowns. They all involved either a massive 50-plus yard chunk play or a blocked punt deep in your own territory if you're the Texans. Don't allow that. Don't stop doing that. Stop allowing big plays. Be on your assignments. Don't fall asleep in coverage. Tackle well, all those things. I'll get to tackling in just a little bit. But that's number one, the big plays. You can't have three of them like that. You know, I'd love to know what the percentages are for a team winning a game when it gets 350-plus yard plays in the passing game. I would guess it's pretty high. The Texans were able to overcome that trend. I know that the odds are very high when you give up a blocked punt that you're going to lose the game. Oftentimes, a team that gets a punt blocked loses, like 90% of the time. I was shocked by that stat. But back in week one when it happened, I saw that number and now a lot of that is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Most teams that get punts blocked, like a majority of them, are shitty teams that would lose anyways. But that's also, it's a gift that another team is getting, like a gift, like even more so sometimes than just your garden variety fumble or interception. Because often, obviously, if you're punting, you're in your own territory, and a block punt usually goes back towards the goal line. You're typically setting somebody up either for a room service touchdown or an actual touchdown on the block punt. So no big plays. That's can number one. And that goes for special teams and on defense. Don't allow it. Number two, we'll stick with the defense. Bring pressure. Keep doing it. The Texans are second in the league in quarterback pressure right now. 41.3%, I think it is, of the snaps, they get pressure. They're fourth in sacks. So a lot of their pressure numbers have been good all year long. But the pressures are finally turning into sacks. I think most importantly, they're turning into sacks for Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. So we feel better about this dynamic duo that we have. DeNico Autry getting involved in the sack parade would be a really, really nice thing this weekend. DeNico Autry was back, played, I think, 28 snaps in the game against Green Bay on Sunday. Didn't really flash very much. I would imagine shaking off some rust. I hope so. He definitely had fresh legs. And hopefully the fact that he's going against one of his former teams would bring a little extra oomph from DeNico Autry. So the pressure, Anthony Richardson, if he can't scramble, does not respond to pressure very well. He was pressured on a bunch of his snaps against Miami, and he had a horrible game throwing the football again. And a lot of that had to do, he got blitzed a bunch. I don't know if DeMeco plans on blitzing Anthony Richardson. I can't remember how much he blitzed in week one, but DeMeco likes blitzing young quarterbacks. So maybe he does, but you gotta keep bringing the pressure inside and outside, and hopefully the Texans are able to do that. All right, number three. I mean, some of these are very obvious because they've played this team already once a year, but you got to run the ball like you did the first time around. That's the only game this year for me where the Texans have looked like a Kubiak, Shanahan, this is what it's supposed to look like run game. That's the only game. I know Joe Mixon's run for over 100 yards in a couple other games this year, including against Green Bay last week, and then he ran for over 100 against New England. That New England game, they had two huge runs, one by Damian Pierce, one by Joe Mixon, and then other than that, they were under 3 yards a carry the rest of the game. This past week, Joe Mixon had 115 yards on 25 carries, and I think a lot of that was because he's Joe Mixon. Breaking tackles, just looks different hitting the hole did it with a lot of clutter, all those things. Against the Colts in week one, Mixon had 159 yards on 30 carries, and his long carry for the day was 13 yards. So he was churning out yardage all day long, and that applied till the very end of the game when they needed to run the ball with about 4 minutes to go in the game. They were running the ball when the Colts knew that the Texans wanted to run the ball, and they were still able to convert first downs. Now, some of that, they needed CJ to put a cape on and get a third and 11 to Nico Collins. So there's that. But got to be able to run the football. That'll loosen some things up, I would hope. It didn't last week against the Packers. This defense isn't as good as the Packers defense. So I'm hopeful that this looks a lot like week one, even without Nico Collins. And I understand that's a big deal, especially against this team, because Nico destroys the Indianapolis Colts. So got to be able to run the football and take some pressure off of CJ Stroud. That is can number three. Can number four, got to tackle. Jonathan Taylor should be back in this game. He's practicing this week. Anthony Richardson, they are using him much more in designed runs. He had 14 rushing attempts on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. So this isn't like the first Texans game where Anthony Richardson had six rushing attempts and two or three of them, maybe more, were scrambles. They're designing a lot more runs for him. I think Shane Steichen is realizing, all right, whatever issues he has throwing the football, they are not going to get solved this year in the regular season. He's a 50% passer at best. So we got to lean. We're going to run him into the ground, and especially now that they're potentially a playoff team. Look, if they win this game, the Colts, they're tied for first with the Houston Texans. So there are huge stakes in this game. They're going to run Anthony Richardson. So you got to be able to, you got to tackle Jonathan Taylor. You've got to tackle in the passing game. Can't see, last time Kamar Lassiter was out there, was in that Bills game, and he came up to hit Keon Coleman, misses a tackle, boom, off to the races, off to the house. So you got to tackle in this game. That's part and parcel of not giving up any big plays. Last game, they gave up big plays, and all the yards came through the air. There's a big potential of giving up big plays to this Colts team if you don't tackle Jonathan Taylor and this receiving core and Anthony Richardson if they choose to run him. So tackling will be at a premium. The Texans were tackling well the first time they played the Colts. Early in the season, the Texans statistically were one of the best tackling teams in football. That has not been the case over the last few weeks. They have been a worse tackling team over the last few weeks. That needs to get fixed, and it needs to start now. So that's number four. Number five, biggest one, the offensive line. All this rhetoric, all this talk that we're hearing this week about, oh, we've done it before. We know we can do it. It's not going to happen again. It took 3 weeks for the penalty thing to not happen again, okay? So it's not like you guys go into the lab and fix shit right away. We were told it wasn't going to happen again with the penalties, and it happened for two more weeks. Now, you eventually did fix it, but we ain't got time for this, man, because an offside or a false start or an illegal formation doesn't get CJ Stroud killed. You know what gets him killed? Not picking up a blitz. Falling on your ass when you're blocking. That gets CJ Stroud killed. This is a different kind of mistake set that the Texans are involved with right now, that the offensive line and tight ends are committing right now. They've got to protect CJ Stroud. And if you give him time to throw, I don't care that Nico's not there. If you just give him time to throw, good things are going to happen for this football team. Good things happen for this football team when they only had one good wide receiver on the field last year at times, whether it was Tank Dell in the games that Nico was out or Nico after Tank went down with the injuries. As long as there was one of them out there, for whatever reason, the offensive line protected good enough last year to allow CJ Stroud to cook. And that may be what needs to happen. We talked about that a lot on Payne and Pendergast this week and on the post-game show after the Packers game last week. Me and Clint Sterner on the post-game show and me and Seth on Payne and Pendergast is they may need to functionally change some of what they do offensively in terms of formations and schemes. I don't know why, but it feels like Bobby Slowick is hell-bent on having 80% of their snaps run with everybody within a couple of yards of the hash marks with nobody out wide. I don't know why this is. I watched them have really good games offensively last year with wide receivers split out wide. I watched Noah Brown get 150 yards in two consecutive games. Where the hell is that? So, and one of them They didn't have Nico Collins against the Bengals. So they, I will be very disappointed if it's the same formations, but just with different play calls. I think they functionally need to change what it is they're doing, give CJ a better view of things, put the offensive lineman in a much better spot. If you spread out like that, it makes it really hard to bring those stunts and twists and blitzes that the Packers were doing. I think the fact that the Texans were inviting all of these linebackers and DBs into the box or near the box lent itself to the chaos that was going on in front of CJ. I say in front of CJ Stroud. Oftentimes it didn't stay in front of him very long. Most of the time it was in his lap within a second. So whatever the offensive line is selling us right now, man, you better follow through on that sale. I'm going to hold my receipt right here. And you guys better be better this week. That's it. CJ Stroud said in his press conference, hey, I know the offense, I'm paraphrasing, but he was, you could tell they're hearing the criticism of the offensive line, whether it's on social media, whether it's in the various written word outlets that we have, shows like ours. I mean, we've been going in on the O-line all week. I'm certain that a lot of that has gotten back to them and gotten back to CJ. CJ kind of took up for his guys, which I respect. He also told the media to be positive, which I will stay neutral on because it's CJ. I didn't like it when Lovie Smith did it, but Lovie Smith did it with a very condescending tone. I think CJ truly is defending his offensive lineman, which is great. You know, like as much as I'm skittish about the message of telling the media how to cover a team, that CJ has been as brutalized as he's been, and he's still willing to unsolicited take up for his offensive line, I think speaks to the culture. I think it speaks to D'Amico Ryan's ability to keep that room together. Hopefully no factions developing like it. Like, I don't know if we reached this point yet because the offense isn't putrid. I mean, it was bad against Green Bay throwing the ball, but I don't think we're even close to a point where there's some sort of schism in the Texans locker room between, say, the defense and the offense. I don't think they've got the type of guys where that thing is going to happen. So to see CJ do that again, like the message there, I'm on like, hey, be positive guys or whatever. Like, give us reasons to be positive. We'll be positive. I think that's been proven. I've been accused of being overly positive at times. But I'm cool with him taking up for his offensive line. I'm cool with him taking up for guys who didn't even come close to doing their jobs last week, when one of those jobs is to make sure that CJ gets as little bodily harm administered to him as is humanly possible. So protect CJ, please. Final can prediction, 27-17 Texans. I feel good about this game. D'Amico Ryans is, since the week two loss to Indianapolis at NRG Stadium last year, the only two-game losing streak D'Amico Ryans has had was those two games at the beginning of his career. His 0-2 start is the only two-game losing streak of his coaching career. After a loss since that week two Indianapolis game, D'Amico Ryans is 7-0 straight up and 5-2 against the spread in games following a loss. His team typically bounces back and gets the message after a loss. I think they're going to do that here. This is still an Indy team that was lucky to beat the Dolphins last week. They were lucky to be in the game against the Texans in week one. I don't know that they've really had any super impressive outings yet as a team. I'm more scared of Joe Flacco than I am Anthony Richardson, and Anthony Richardson is going to start in this game. So I think the Texans win 27-17, which is a cover and an under. Under. Over-under is 46 on this game. Spread, last I checked, was Texans minus 5. So there you go. A reminder again, houmailbag@gmail.com. Send me your emails. You can do it next couple days if you want to do it after the Colts game. That makes for a better mailbag on Tuesday. So looking forward to hearing from you guys. And again, a reminder to subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend. I don't have that in the little graphic right here, the tell a friend part. But I appreciate it when you do that. Share the podcast with people. It's cool. So until Sunday, hope you guys have a great weekend. And appreciate you tuning into the Utopia Football Podcast. We'll see all of you 6 a.m. throughout the week on Payne and Pendergast. We'll see you at 9 a.m. for Texans Countdown on Sports Radio 610 and the Odyssey app on Sunday. Noon kickoff, Texans and Colts. Have a great weekend. Big thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer, for getting this out to all of you, by the way. Anthony, I appreciate you. all of you, enjoy your weekend. We'll see you on Monday.